It's the Pure Nintendo Koopa Cast. Trev here calling the action, joined as usual by Justin.
Hey, everyone.
And returning to form our trio, we have Gemma.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
This is going to be an exciting episode because I know this is a game we all love. And there's a lot to cover because we're doing a Link to the Past as part of our ongoing Zelda retrospective. And that's a landmark title in the series, really, I think, cementing it as one of the key franchises for Nintendo. But I thought we could start by just talking about, as fans of the original NES game, what were some of the things that stood out to us in terms of improvements, leaps, advancements? And Justin, why don't you go ahead and start us off on that?
Yeah, I mean,
Anything that stuck out to you?
yeah, one of the first thing that comes to mind, I mean, obviously the graphics were much improved. You know, everyone who had played Super Mario World and you know, coming from the NES, you're like, wow, this is awesome. And so a lot of enhancements, obviously visually, but I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is the music in A Link to the Past. I mean, you could almost have like a whole podcast just talking about the music, but I'm sure a lot
Next
of,
episode.
yeah, that's right. I'm sure a lot of us have, you know, even if you haven't played the game, you've probably heard some of the songs from A Link to the Past, or heard, you know, variations in future Zelda games since then. But man, just so many great tracks. Love the desert track, any of the dungeons. There was always just a good amount of suspense and mystery, you know, woven through the notes. So, yeah, definitely was really cool. Just experiencing the music, and the visuals stood out quite a bit. And yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think pretty much hit the nail on the head, especially when you say Super Mario World as well. For me, and we talked about this last week, how my computer gaming journey started with the NES and how I got the bundle with Super Mario Brothers and the first Legend of Zelda game. And so that was my first foray into gaming. Then along came the Super Nintendo, and it came with Super Mario World, but then one of the next games I got was The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. And for me, this really cemented my love for Nintendo and these two franchises in particular. There's just so much. I see it as like a really, I think it was like an evolution for both series, you know? Like you said, the music is one thing, the graphics, obviously another thing. The jump from 8-bit to 16-bit, I don't know, for me seemed huge. It just seemed like a massively enhanced look and feel to the whole game and the series. And I don't know, I'm trying to think back to when I played it, and you sort of jump straight into the action with this one. You get the message from Zelda and she's trapped and you got to help her, and you're straight into the palace, and there's the rain and the whole atmosphere. I think it's very atmospheric, it's very engaging. Like you said, the music in every dungeon and the bosses, and there's just so much to it. It feels bigger, it feels, yeah, just a lot. There's a lot, so much more to it that for me it really cemented my love of this series in particular. Do you agree with that, Trev?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this Link to the Past took everything I liked about the first game, and it's just better.
Yeah, exactly.
Justin talked on the music, and I mean, especially being I was a Genesis kid at the start of the 16-bit wars, and
Right.
boy, the SNES music chip was so much better. And I just remember like walking through the Lost Woods and seeing, the parallax there with the fog and hearing the do
Yeah.
do 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 do, and it's like, oh man, this is awesome. But yeah, the world just felt more alive. Like it wasn't empty. Like, I mean, the original Zelda had a few characters that would spout off like one line of dialogue, but here we had like whole villages. It just gave it a lot of personality, and
Yeah.
The dungeons, I think, especially this is the game where they really started to feel distinct, and not just like similar looking mazes. They had unique aesthetics and just
That's
different
true.
feelings. And yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I guess I don't have one particular thing that sticks out. It's just everything you guys said and more.
It is everything, isn't it? I love what you said that it took what we loved about the original game, because it did. Like, it's very like the it's top down perspective. It's got dungeons. It's got weapons and bosses. But it just takes all of those elements and just builds on it. It really just creates this next level kind of thing. So that's why for me, I feel like it was a I don't know. I was trying to think of a good phrase for it, like a double tap kind of thing. Like it was the NES one and then the Super NES one. And that's it for me. I'm done. This is my series that I love now. It just
Mic
really
drop.
it drove home that point that this is something to play and to watch, in future iterations. And
Absolutely. One of the big things we didn't mention yet, but I know we're all thinking about is the light and dark world. Obviously, the original Zelda had a second quest. There was replay there, to that extent. But light and dark world, I mean, you have two versions of Hyrule. And yeah, I probably should have let off that there's going to be spoilers for a game that's 30 years old here. So, but I just remember, get Independence and then be like, oh, what's this? I'm a pink bunny hopping around in this post-apocalyptic Hyrule. What is this? And then it's like, whoa, there's so many more dungeons.
That was the
Anything?
best.
Oh, go ahead.
That was the best. Kind of fake out a little bit. Like you feel like you beat the game after you get the pendants. You go back. You fight. You're fighting Aghanim. You're like, man, this game's kind of short. And this, but man, did the game. And you realize you're like maybe a third of the way through. After that, and I still think that's one of the best moments in any game ever. That, so completely shatters your expectations. Already the game was amazing up to that point, but man, it just further like you said, cemented itself as a classic.
Yeah, it just opened it up a lot more, didn't it? Having that kind of parallel, I guess, light and dark, and everything that was in the light world was somehow, had a corresponding area on the dark world that was different but the same. Like, it was just, yeah, it was really cool. It was really well done. And like you said, like a fake out. Like, you didn't expect that the first time you played it.
Yeah, there were no like nowadays they have whole YouTube channels and websites and forums dedicated to Zelda. We didn't have that back then. There were no like spoilers really. I mean, so it's like surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Which is cool. Which makes it, I don't know, and I guess how does that translate to today? Like, I'd like to know what it's like for someone playing it today, even though it is 30 years old. Someone's gonna be playing it for the first time. What do they think
I
of
know. Hopefully they're not listening to our podcast because
That's
we're
right.
giving away some of the surprise, but
There
one of
was.
the things that, oh, I'm sorry, Justin.
Sorry. There was. I may have mentioned it last time, but there was a thread that I saw where someone was playing A Link to the Past for the first time, and they were lamenting the fact that they felt the game was short, and they were literally getting up to that point of going back to face Aghanim, and then of course, it comes full circle. Everyone's like, keep playing the game, keep playing the game, so there's definitely people that haven't discovered it yet, and obviously, every minute there's someone else born that could potentially discover the game down the road. It's going to be really cool to see that, kids growing up, and I think there will be some kids that are like, hey, I want to experience some of these earlier classics, right? And hopefully they go in kind of fresh and don't spoil too much of it. I know It's kind of a like right now you're basically watching a lot of people beat games or play games prior to playing it yourself. So I hope people don't, spoil the whole game by watching a YouTube video or a playthrough or something, and then play it. It's really amazing to experience it that first time and fresh. So
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that stood out to me, it never occurred to me until I was just refreshing myself with the game here. I think this has the most dungeons out of any Zelda game. And maybe there's a couple that, maybe you don't classify as full dungeons, but between the light and dark world, there's like over a dozen dungeons. Do you guys have a particular a favorite, least favorite? Maybe I'll start with you, Jim. Are there any that really stand out in your memory?
I was thinking about this recently as well, because obviously we're talking about it today, and I've gone back and played it a little as well, just on the online Switch dealio. But I don't know. I'm just trying to think what stood out to me at the time, and I think it's kind of like what you said, Justin, how they're aesthetically so different. Like there's that swamp kind of one that stood out to me, I think, just because it was so different to anything else. The Skull Woods, I just love that they were all so different. You never really knew what was coming up. And there's obviously weapons that come with kind of each area that fit in with the bosses, and I love that as well. You're getting this new weapon and it's going to have to play a part in unlocking something, and you get your hook shot to get rid of those little eyeball things off that boss in the swamp or whatever. It's just there's I don't know, I don't think I could pick a favorite really. Those few kind of stand out to me. I think even the desert one probably stood out to me a bit as well. But I really enjoyed all of them, and just I enjoyed the fact that there was so many and that they were so different. And I'd like actually I love that the point you brought up, Trev, about being more dungeons. I think you're right. I think there are probably more dungeons in this one than any other game. I'm gonna have to Google that while Justin's answering your question, I think.
Yeah, do some fact checking, because I'm definitely yeah, Justin, I know we were chatting about this a little before we started recording, but I think you and I might have the same favorite dungeon.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Turtle Rock. I think that is the seventh and last one in the Dark World, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I
But
think you're right. Yeah.
yeah, that was really cool. The boss is fantastic. But I don't know. Yeah, there's just a lot of cool things. I think the music getting into Final Dungeons, even from the original Zelda game, that music in that final one was really it had a sense of like urgency to it. So I remember I've always kind of liked that. You can almost sense in the game that you're getting to something bigger and something closer to the end of the game, possibly. But I don't know,
Sure.
it felt pretty epic to like even opening up that dungeon, when you use the medallion, and I don't know, like it just felt It, man, it just felt like you were already on this epic adventure, and it just felt like that much more, like, man, what am I gonna find next in this game,
Yeah. Yeah,
and that
well,
was
I'm
a good
glad you
point too.
mentioned.
Sorry, you get your.
Oh, no worries. I'm glad you mentioned the medallions, Justin. Actually, I had a poll on a Twitter asking people what their favorite one was, and the Quake medallion went out with just over 40%, and that was one of the ones you needed to even get in the dungeon. But I just remember those, it was almost like an amusement park ride. You got Link on that platform, almost like a little roller coaster riding around and trying not to fall off, and then trying to remember, okay, which pipe spits me out where I need to be. And I think there was even a section where you briefly went back outside, and I'm always a sucker for dungeons that take you outside. And And a shout out to what Gemma mentioned too with the Skull Woods. I think that had a similar thing with a lot of different entrances. So it kind of like almost ties in the overworld with the dungeons. But yeah, so many good ones. And there's really only one dungeon that I remember disliking in the game, and that was the ice dungeon. I don't inherently dislike ice, but I just remember there was a puzzle. You had to drop a block and get it to land. And it was some of that we were talking about before the show, some of that tedious backtracking. And what was interesting is actually the Game Boy Advance port. I think they changed that puzzle to make it a less tedious. But that's probably the only dungeon that I dislike, just from a gameplay point of view. I think it's pretty with the ice, but yeah, one dungeon out of a dozen that I dislike is pretty good numbers. Were you able to
Yeah, it's a
find out dungeons,
good
Jim?
score. Well, mostly I think there's usually eight, right, in a normal game. Is that right? A normal kind of Zelda game, there are eight dungeons.
It's
But
not
I'm saying there are
uncommon, yeah.
12. Yeah, I think there's 12 in, you hit the nail on the head, you said a dozen. So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
So it is the highest one, which is cool. Another reason why it's so special.
So here's what I was thinking about. I've been replaying through some of the games, and I like both the top down ones and the 3D ones, but feel like maybe the top down ones and this game especially have aged better than some of the early 3D ones. Do you guys agree with that? Do you disagree? And why so?
Who wants to take this one first?
It's a head scratcher, huh?
I probably agree, I think. Because I mean, even now, and I think I may have touched on this last week when a lot of games strive for that 16-bit look, especially the top-down kind of games. I feel like that's still, it's called retro, but it still looks good. And I'm more than happy to play a game that has that kind of retro 16-bit style, that emulates these kind of games like Secret of Mana or Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, Chrono Trigger, things like that, that sort of Super Nintendo of games. And playing those ones now, like playing this game, Link to the Past, like just recently, it still looks and plays really well. I think the 3D ones, maybe it's because we've come so far with that first person style of graphics. Like it, you look at the games of today and they're just crazy, graphically rich. Whereas back then on maybe, I don't know, the Nintendo 64 or whatever, they looked good at the time. They looked really good at the time and it was groundbreaking and phenomenal. But yeah, I definitely agree that looking back at those, it looks, the shapes look a bit more polygonal. They look a bit, the edges are too sharp or whatever. And the light probably isn't shading as it could do in its best version. So I think I tend to agree. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I think so. The 2D games of I think are pretty timeless. I think of even like the animations and stuff, like just even the walking animations, the Pegasus boots and Link to the Past, like there's so much detail that your mind almost creates from those graphics, where I feel like a 3D Zelda, you're getting exactly what you're seeing.
That's a good
Kind of
point.
like a book and a movie, right? Like a book, you can kind of use your imagination. It can maybe even seem grander than what's even described. And I think that like 2D, you can do that a little bit better. It almost, you're building a little bit more of that world around the 2D visuals, right? You're like, oh man, I wonder what Link looks like. Oh, in my booklet, he looks like this. And oh, I wonder, is he taller than that guy? Even though everyone's kind of scrunched down, like. It you have to use some of that imagination to fill out the world, and Yeah, the
That's a
3D.
good analogy. And even in this game, they call Link a kid a lot, right? Because he's a kid, he's young. So you kind of, that's kind of that story element where you're probably even subconsciously using your imagination to picture him as shorter than the adults who are running around without even really realizing it. I really like that analogy, the book and the movie thing. That works well.
I'm going to jump just a little ahead of my notes, Justin, because you made me think about filling in with our imagination. The first time I played this game, and probably the second, probably actually, it was probably years until I realized that this Link actually had pink hair. I never noticed it. I filled it in with brown, I guess. But did you guys catch that the first time you played it? And what'd you think of it if you did?
I did not catch it, or at least I don't remember catching it. But to be
Just a
honest, I
little.
did notice it when I played just this week, and I'm like, oh, Link looks different to me, to
It's
my
high
mind's eye.
definition.
Yeah. But I don't remember thinking about that at the time at all. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember him having pink hair necessarily playing it. Maybe it was just our, we were playing on old CRTs, right? Maybe, and they were smaller TVs. Like, maybe, how sometimes, like, when you looked at a CRT, if you got up really close to the TV, which you're not supposed to, your parents are like, don't get close to the TV, but you could almost see like the colors inside it, right? Like you'd see kind of the red, green, and blue a little bit if you got up close enough. So maybe I just thought it was some other just weird artifact or something with the way the light was hitting the screen. I don't know, but yeah, now of course seeing it on modern screens, it's like, that's odd.
So there you go. I had a 13-inch TV that we used to play a. Oh man, I think of the games I played on that. I played four-player Mario Kart on that TV, and I don't remember complaining. So I mean, you got by, but yeah, I don't think I realized that until might have even been around the time the Game Boy Advance port came out. And I'm like, huh. It's interesting, but just one of those little fun facts, I guess. But yeah, we're all in agreement that the 2D games are a little more timeless. But if anyone listening, if you want to weigh in on that, or if you disagree, drop us an email. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. Just thinking about this game though, and kind of its legacy. I mentioned the GBA port. I got that with Four Swords. Either of you guys play any of the Four Sword games much? They are technically canon, but I've really only dabbled with them, so not to get too off topic of A Link to the Past, but they are kind of connected.
Yeah, I've played Four
Yeah.
Swords and Four Swords Adventure, and I don't know that I ever had enough friends that had the Link cable for the GameCube and simultaneously Game Boy Advances to connect up with them. But I think I may have played it maybe with just two players the most one time. But it was a really novel concept. It was almost like the Wii U in a little way. It felt like, because you would go into these different caves where you could collect coins or different things, and then you got that experience on your Game Boy Advance in front of you. So that was kind of a cool, novel thing. But I remember liking him. I think was it Vati? Was he the main bad guy in those? Like
Yes.
in Minish Cap and other, like there's some continuity a little bit, like, obviously we have Ganon and Ganondorf, but I think Vati was the main bad guy for that and some other side Zelda games like that.
Cool. Yeah, I don't really remember playing it all that much. I'm not even sure if I had that one. Maybe because I didn't have a lot of friends with the game, like you were saying, Justin. I remember playing it at some point, though, so I must have had a friend who had it, but I just don't have a strong memory of that for some reason. Yeah. Been blipped out of
My
my mind.
biggest memory is seeing the basically a link to the past its kind of world represented in GameCube visuals. That stuck out to me, and I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. you know, this world is so, this style is so iconic. But yeah, so it, you know, it inspired that. The game we're going to talk about next, Link's Awakening, was inspired by this game. We had, of course, the Oracle games. And obviously, it had a sequel on the 3DS, but just kind of looking at the legacy of Link to the Past, do you think it's, not that I'm asking us to rank games, because that's impossible, but mm-hmm. do you think it increased its standing insofar as it was so influential on so many games? Yeah, what do you think, Justin?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's... you know, like if I'm ranking Zelda games, you know, some people are like, all right, you got to lump the 2D ones, rank them separately, and then rank the 3D ones. But if you're taking them all together, I think you have to hold some of those original games, you know, as high, if not higher, than the ones that came before it. Like, I think I was mentioning to you, Trev, A Link Between Worlds I really enjoyed, but it was so much of its success and what it did well was based off of A Link to the Past, you know, more so than some of the other ones. Like the direct comparisons are so obvious, you know, with you know, the reuse of the world and a lot of the you know, just the gameplay elements from A Link to the Past. So I, you know, in my mind, it's very easy for me to say A Link to the Past is still higher in my book than A Link Between Worlds, but I still love The Link Between Worlds, and it's fantastic, but man, it just, so much of what A Link to the Past did well, we're still seeing in games. And some things I think we, you know, we still haven't even seen some of this stuff in games anymore. Like again, like that big fake out where, you know, we knew so little of what was coming next, and then the game surprises you like that. I don't know of another game that's done that. Other than A Link to the Past, and that just kind of shocks me a little bit. Like, there was really no other developers that thought that was an interesting, really cool, you know, idea to emulate. But I don't know. Yeah, Link to the Past would still be very high on my list. I would put it up in probably top five. And we know that it's really influential. We know that Reggie Fils-Aimé, that was the popular Nintendo of America president, Link to the Past was his favorite game. I think not just Zelda game, but like game of all time. So we know that, you know, there's a lot of big influential people even in the game industry that hold it in such high regard too.
Yeah, definitely. I think it would have to be at the top of my Zelda list, I think. Pretty sure. There's a lot of games.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's really hard. This one, I mean, this one, yeah, it definitely had a big impact on me and my gaming journey. So I don't know if that's nostalgia but we all know the game itself is brilliant. So I think it's justified. But yeah. I was thinking about the whole Link to the Past versus A Link Between Worlds, and I loved A Link Between Worlds, and I don't know if it would have been as good for someone like me and Justin, I guess, as well, if we hadn't grown up with and enjoyed A Link to the Past. I mean, it's definitely a good game on its own merits, but would it, if it came out when it did, without having that history behind it, I think it still would have been regarded well, but did it rely on its history, or... I don't know. I'm not sure if that's making sense there or not.
Yeah. Well, I think of it as a compliment, because not to get, you know, too off topic, but I'll admit, I think I like A Link Between Worlds a little bit more than A Link to the Past.
Yeah.
For reasons that we'll talk about when we get to that episode. But, you know, that's a compliment to A Link to the Past, because, you know, it laid down a lot of the groundwork. And you know, in a perfect world, any video game sequel should be better than the original. It's just, you know, technology improves, people are more experienced, and more ideas come forth. But yeah, you know, it's the DNA was in this game. And I was thinking too what you said, Justin, about the, you know, the transition from the light world to the dark world. I remember playing Ocarina of Time when, Link went from being a kid to 7 years in the future. And I remember thinking, this is cool, but it kind of feels like a light dark world situation. Like I'm just going to a different version of Hyrule. I've seen that already. So, not to knock that game, obviously, because that's a landmark game in its own respect, but I feel like, a lot of the things we love, and it's cool, but Link to the Past already did
Yeah,
So, for
that's true.
better or worse,
Yeah, it's hard. And thinking about sequels being better, I mean, you're right. In theory, they should be. Is it similar to, I don't know if you can compare games to movies this way, but how many sequels in movies are better than the originals? I don't know. Most of them, maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to say. And
It's
games, I
tricky
guess.
though. It's like games are, are interactive. I think that's like a lot of the things come down to even like user interface. Like we're gonna talk next episode about Link's Awakening, which I loved on the Game Boy, but I adore on the Switch. And a huge reason for that is it's just so much easier to control. I'm not limited to two buttons. I can go in the inventory and it's quick and seamless, and that makes a huge difference. So I think, it's interesting to think about. I don't know. And nostalgia plays a part too, which I think is okay as long as we're honest with ourselves and admit that. I'm totally nostalgic for this game.
Yeah, I agree. As long as,
And
yeah,
proud of.
we're conscious of it.
Some food for thought. We had another reader poll I wanted to look at, and we can chat about it as well, asking for favorite bosses. Obviously, Twitter has character limits, so I can only put a few. But the where did it go? This is what happened when I got too many windows open. Winner of favorite boss poll was the Almasaur King. With almost 48% of the vote. And of course, that inspired an awesome boss on the 3DS. I think it was called the Gemasaur King, where you hit the mask and all those rupees flew out. Do you guys have a favorite boss from this game? Or is it sort of Gemma, like the dungeon where you kind of love them all? It's hard to pick.
There are some really standout ones. I think the Helmasar King is one of the standout ones. I like the one that you mentioned earlier, Justin, the Trinix, is it from the Turtle Rock? That was, yeah, that was another standout, I think. Just being the seventh, or the second to final level, getting pretty hard there with the bosses. I mean, the thing I like about Zelda boss fights is generally they're pretty, there's a good balance. They're tricky, but they're not impossible. And you need to work out how what's this one boss's trigger. What do you need to beat this boss? Like, do bombs work on this one? Do arrows work? Does the sword work? Whatever. And I like that element of having to work out how am I going to beat this new guy? I think. It keeps you on your toes for sure. And I mean, usually, as I said before, there is a new weapon that you've just discovered that probably does work, but how do you use it? What's the best way to do it? And then there's like that combination of using, like I said before, also one of those bosses, I think it was, I don't know if it was the Swamp Palace or there's two, I think, that have like, there's a boss that has like these floating things around it. And you have to get the floating things off the boss first. You use your hook shot, you bring the thing to whack it a few times, and then repeat until you can actually get to the boss underneath all these little kind of things on the outside. I think that was a pretty cool concept. So maybe that boss stood out a little bit more for me. I'm trying to think which one it was. There were two. There was the Argus, is it, in the Swamp Palace? There was another one before that, which was more like a little pink kind of octopusy thing, I think. Do you guys remember that one? I'm trying to
I
think.
do. I don't remember. It's funny when I put the poll about bosses, I think Kirk retweeted with a comment like he's like, "Who actually remembers their names?" And it's kind of true. Like I remember the dungeons, and I can describe the boss and their patterns, but I'm not the best at the names. So there's probably some big fan listening to us and being like, oh man, how do they not know? But yeah, I'm old. What can I say?
Yeah, the Helmasaur King and Trinax, I knew those by name. I was like, oh yeah, I remember. I thought the Helmasaur King was so cool that you use the hammer. I like that with basically most every Zelda boss, at least since Link to the Past, you were using that key item, right, to take it down. And like Gemma, you said that, you know, part of the thing that makes Zelda bosses so cool is that they're a puzzle in and of themselves. So it was always really interesting to figure out what could hurt them. Like obviously, you know, later on we knew that we could distract, you know, Ganondorf with a fishing rod or, you know, different things like that that people discover. But it was really cool. The Helmasaur King battle was really fun. Just, you know, it felt very interactive, like you were, you know, taking this helmet, this mask off of this massive creature in pieces, right, with the hammer. So it felt really, you know, games, even modern games, don't do destructibility all that well, or even, you know, hit detection as well. And like, man, that game, you know, A Link to the Past, you're playing that battle and you're like, man, I'm just have to, you know, keep chipping away at this guy, and I don't know when his mask is going to come off, but I'm, you know, it felt a little bit more, it was a little bit more sense of urgency playing those bosses when you don't have an extra dimension to dodge, you know, up or down, and when his tail is swinging around like that was an intense boss fight.
That's so true. And it always used to get my heart pumping, like the adrenaline, you know, from being just even when you know this is the room where the boss is, you know you're about to enter in, and you know you just get that sense of, oh my gosh, am I ready for this? Like, do I have everything I need? And then you go in and you know you start the battle. I just there's that I love that kind of sense of adventure, I guess. As well as, like you said, that puzzle element, that each boss also has that puzzle element to it, so it keeps you on your toes, definitely. And the one I was talking about, sorry, was the Swamp Palace. Argus was the one I was thinking of that had the little
I guess,
kind of orange little I don't know what they are, little things around it. You had to hook shut them off. So
It was
that one,
like a squid or like a jellyfish or
inside was that. So yeah, I guess I like the bosses like that. And I think the Helmasaur King is like that too, because he's got the mask. So it's a two-step process. You've got to do something first, you know, get the mask off or get these little critters off the squid, and then you can attack, you know, properly. So I think that extra level of, I don't know, tactics, I guess, maybe. And I think also just the fact that there's no health meter, like you don't know how much there is to go on these guys. So I think you were just saying this before. Every hit is like, is this gonna take him down? Am I there yet? Am I there yet? And meanwhile, your hearts are depleting, so you're like on the edge of your seat as well. It's a real rush, I think, the boss fights.
You reminded me, a few years back, we did a little spread in the mag. I think we did like top five Zelda bosses. Each person who contributed to the article had five, and I had the Helmasaur King slash Gemmasaur King in there, which I think was the only 2D or top-down boss that I had. You know, obviously the 3D bosses are a little more cinematic. You know, the camera pans out, zooms in on them, and things like that. But it left an impression, and kind of like how I think Justin was mentioning about finding ways to even, like with Ganon, with the fishing pole. Like I remember the Helmasaur King was tough with the hammer, and then it's like, oh wait, these bombs work, no way. It's like I'm blowing the mask off and I have to get, you know, right on top of him. And a lot of good bosses. Trinix, obviously, having to juggle the you know, the two different heads, ice and fire. And I had Blind the Thief down as well. I think that was a big kind of shocking, like, oh, you know, we're on this escort mission, and the person we've been escorting is actually the boss. It's like, whoa.
That was pretty funny.
So many fun surprises, and
Yeah. And there's no escaping. You're trapped in that room until you're done. So it's like you have to deal with this right now.
Like,
do I have a fairy in a bottle, or do I have a potion there from syrup, something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a ton that we haven't talked about, but I did want to leave a little bit of time to just kind of cover anything we haven't talked about. We had some basic notes for this episode, but there's all sorts of things we could still touch on. So this is the moment where anything we haven't had a chance to discuss proper, we can give out, and I'll open it to either you guys. Anything in particular that you want to chat about?
You want to go,
If not,
Justin?
I got plenty.
Link to the Past. It seems like the more I'm we talk about these Zelda games, I'm like, man, I just want to play through them again. And I hope that Nintendo announces something about the Zelda 35th anniversary. But it'd be really cool to, like just even go ahead and start playing through them. And Link to the Past. I've played it so many times, and it's just, man, it's just fantastic every time. I loved, and even you get to the end of the game, and the Ganon battle was pretty epic, and
Yeah,
just
it's pretty intense.
all the variety of bosses, locations. The world is already so large and has tons of stuff to discover, and then when they add the Dark World in, you're like, wow, this is. Granted, it was still fairly similar to the main world, but it really did feel like the world was double the size, when you unlock that.
Do you think it gave an impending kind of sense of, I don't know, doom? Because suddenly the world is dark and dying, and Ganon's obviously hell bent on destroying everything. So I don't know. I felt like it did a good job of making you feel that sense of pending doom, that kind of urgency almost. Like you really are a hero on a quest here. I mean, even like, I think I said it before, he's a kid, but straight into the adventure right from the start. And you sort of wake up and you go for a walk, and then suddenly someone thrusts a sword in your hand and a shield, and off you go. You're like, go save the world, kid.
So some of the best games begin with rain, right? Like you mentioned that Gemma. I think of Metroid Prime, one of my favorite games, and didn't begin with rain necessarily, but when you land on that first planet and you're looking up, you're seeing the rain, you're like, man, it just created such a atmospheric, immersive feeling, like, wow, this is playing out on my TV screen, but I feel like I'm there,
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. I love the rain. I do. I think maybe it's common because it's a good method of capturing that feeling, that emotion. But I love it when there's rain in the game or even a movie. It does give that some sort of different sense of feeling. But I just lost my train of thought. Sorry. I had a thought that I was going to go with it, and I lost it. But it was more about how the world, I think you said, well, we've all talked about how there was that fake out, kind of a third through the game. And even like I was saying, you're thrust into the action from the get-go. It's almost like it starts at the end, kind of like it starts midway through an adventure, because Zelda's already in trouble. There's already been kidnappings, and there's already evil, happening in the world. It's not like you're just waking up on a farm one day and then suddenly, I don't know, a mana tree is losing its mana and you have to go and sort it out. It's like this is already in progress. You're sort of thrust right into it. So maybe that goes along with the whole fake out, how it's almost like the adventure has already started before you even get there, and you're kind of joining halfway through, and then it's almost like a second adventure starts after that. which I think is pretty cool, the way they set that up. It gives it a bit more of a cinematic kind of feel. And I really think that is a credit to the storytellers. I mean, there's graphics, there's audio, but obviously someone has to create this world and this narrative. And I think that's a hard job. And I don't know, we maybe don't talk about that as much or enough. But I think it's a real credit to the people behind the scenes who do that, who, yeah, make this world, make it alive in terms of the actual narrative. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the cinematic nature to it. One thing that, when you first boot up the game, I love that animation of the Triforce coming together, and then it kind of goes into the whole story of the game. But man, even with such basic visuals and music, you're like, man, this is going to be a pretty epic adventure, so it's What do you think, Trev?
Yeah, A Link to the Past, I think, is really cinematic. I'm trying to think of specific scenes. Like, I remember just the approach to the Master Sword, and it's kind of like, after walking through the Misty Woods, you have this clearing and all the animals are hopping away, and it's like, oh wow, it's little touches like that. But
That is a
I
really
also
good
think,
moment too.
Yeah.
that's the thing too, it's because the world is so packed. Like, I feel like the top-down games really excel at not wasting any screen. Like the 3D games, by and large, I think the overworlds are kind of maybe empty. And I feel like A Link to the Passage is so full of secrets and just characters and different surprises. I think that's a big, contributor to it. And right from the beginning, you were talking about the rain. Like, this is the first game that shows Link, asleep. And I'm pretty sure every Zelda game since has shown Link in some variation of in bed or snoozing or napping or. But even the ending, like I hate to spoil it, but we did put the warning out. But like, it's showing you all the characters you met along the way, and it's like, oh, my uncle survived. He's not dead in the sewers. And oh, here's the lumberjacks. Here's all these characters I met. The flute boy got reunited there. It's like, oh man, it's those connections you make with the characters. I think that really makes you feel like, it's like movie credits,
Yeah,
or
it
what they call movie stinger, where they show like a, post-credit scene.
Yeah, it's the original post-credit scene.
Yeah, I
That's
love that
good.
because there's so much you forget, and then it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember.
Yeah, like when your uncle does give you that sword and shield and just kind of collapses in the sewers, you really do think, what happened to him? Is he okay?
Is he
Like, oh, he's
okay?
dead, but no, he's not.
I did think he was dead. So it was good
Yeah.
to find out he wasn't. Poor thing.
And that's part of the storytelling. I mean, this really was the first game that had, I mean, proper story. I mean, with the sages and, different things. But I feel like it's even more so than that. It's those little things, the characters. I feel like Zelda as a series maybe isn't known for story first, but remember characters, you remember faces, you remember, those things. That's what's really gives it flavor, and I think it makes it endure in our memories.
Definitely. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think,
Excuse
that's
me.
it's yeah, I think that's a really important part of the series. You think of other games that have, for some reason, thinking of Majora's Mask, because that was so character driven. Like, you had to help all these different random people. I don't know, I'm thinking of how Zelda's taken that kind of connection concept and used it in different ways. I think the characters are a huge part of it. We can sort of touch on that last week, even when we talked about Zelda 2, and we weren't super huge fans of it, but we did talk about the people, in the towns that
Yeah.
That was when it started to become, more than just the one-liners in the original NES game. The sequel brought the towns and the people, and we kind of liked that. And then this kind of brought it all home and, really made us feel for all these different people who weren't necessarily part of the adventure. They were kind of background characters, but we still interacted with them and we still cared about them. And yeah, I think the end credits really solidifies that kind of feeling of caring and connecting and being part of a world that's not our own, like being part of an adventure, that interaction, that interactivity. It's like a movie, but it's interactive. We get to actually talk to these people and deal with them and care about them, really. Yeah, I love that.
Nice. Well, I'm looking at the clock, so we could probably keep talking about this for another 45 minutes or so, but I did want to just tease up our before I turn it over to Justin, just tease our next episode.
What's
It's going to be
next for school?
Link's Awakening, which of course owes a lot of its DNA to a link to the past. It was originally actually conceived as bringing a link to the past to the Game Boy before they went in a different direction. But that's going to be an exciting episode. We may even have a surprise guest from pure Nintendo's past. So here's my little
Cool.
tease. But yeah, be looking forward to that. We have three versions to talk about with that game, the original DX on the Game Boy Color, and of course HD on the Switch. But yeah, I'll turn it over to Justin to close out this episode.
Sounds good. Well, again, thank you, Gemma. Thank you, Trev, for joining me and
You're
Trevor, as
welcome.
always, for hosting and setting all this up. This has been a lot of fun. I can't think of a better topic for a podcast than Zelda. So this is this has been awesome to go through these. And looking forward to seeing everybody next week or next time that we do the podcast for Link's Awakening, and definitely be studying up and playing the game if you haven't. And we'll look forward to dissecting and going through all the amazing things from, again, one of my favorite Zelda games, Link's Awakening. So thank you all, and have an amazing evening.